Here is a flash just received in our newsroom. Dateline Washington. United States Army transport carrying lumber was torpedoed 1,300 miles west of San Francisco. Details on this news and other news that has been coming in the Far East situation will be given to you at approximately 3:35 during the intermission of the New York Philharmonic concert. We return you now to the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. This program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii by air, President Roosevelt has just announced. The attack also was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu.
The Symphony No. 1 in F minor by the modern Russian composer Shostakovich performed as the opening work on this afternoon's Philharmonic program. Artur Rudzinski conducting. Japan has attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, and Manila, the Philippine Islands, from the air. The attack is developing. Today, Dean Taylor's usual commentary will be replaced by a further report on the Far Eastern situation. We pause now for 15 seconds. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is WCCO, studios in Minneapolis and St. Paul. The Twin City temperature, 37 degrees.
This is John Daly speaking from the CBS newsroom in New York. Here is the Far East situation as reported to this moment. The Japanese have attacked the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, and our defense facilities at Manila, capital of the Philippines. The first disclosure of this news was made by Presidential Secretary Stephen Early by telephone at approximately 2:25 in Washington. I read the text of this historic announcement at a little after 2:30. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor from the air and all naval and military activities on the island of Oahu, the principal American base in the Hawaiian Islands. That was Secretary Early's message. Short while later, he dictated another message. A second air attack has been reported. This one has been made on the Army and Navy bases in Manila. And here's a last-minute Associated Press flash from Honolulu. A naval engagement is in progress off Honolulu with at least one black enemy aircraft carrier in action against the Pearl Harbor defenses. Secretary Early informed all correspondents and then rushed to the White House to be with President Roosevelt. As the announcement was made, the two Japanese envoys, Ambassador Nomura and Special Emissary Kurosu, were at the State Department. Columbia's correspondent in London, Bob Trout, heard the news for the first time from our report from New York. Up to that moment, or very shortly before then, the British capital had not been informed of the Japanese attack on the Hawaiian Islands and on Manila. In view of Prime Minister Churchill's recent pledge that a British declaration of war on Japan would follow almost immediately upon the outbreak of war between Japan and the United States, a British announcement is expected soon. Columbia's correspondent, Ford Wilkins, was put on the air in CBS's regular 2:30 news program on Sunday afternoon from Manila. He was cut off the air suddenly while he was talking about air raid shelters, possibly because of censorship. In communication with Columbia's radio station, KGMB, in Honolulu, we heard here in New York that the Pearl Harbor base had been attacked and anti-aircraft fire was heard. A telephone message to the United Press from Fort Schaefer in Hawaii said that 50 planes attacked the island of Oahu. The planes were officially described so far as unidentified in these messages, although later reports that have come in from the press associations definitely identify at least two of these planes as carrying the emblem of the rising sun, the emblem of Japan. The Pearl Harbor attack reported by KGMB in Honolulu is said to have been carried out in other messages by 50 to 100 planes, and a half an hour ago it was said to be still continuing. The smoke of anti-aircraft guns rose over the Pearl Harbor Navy Yard. Heavy smoke also drifted up from Hickam Field in the Pearl Harbor area, apparently from fires, and witnesses said fires broke out on Ford Island. The main targets in this action by the Japanese appeared to be Hickman Field, which is the Army field, and the great naval base at Pearl Harbor, and several planes were reported shot down. Also, we've had a report from Honolulu that policemen and firemen were ordered in a radio broadcast to go to Army and Navy posts immediately. Major George Fielding Elliott, when this dispatch originally came in, pointed out that this may indicate that some of the Japanese resident in that area are being aids in this action by the Japanese against the shore areas, and the firemen and policemen may have been called up to stop any abortive revolutionary action in that area. Here's the first Associated Press dispatch from Honolulu. At least two Japanese bombers, their wings bearing the insignia of the rising sun, appeared over Honolulu at about 7:35 a.m. Honolulu time today and dropped bombs. As I told you a little earlier, these are the two planes of the reported 50 to 100, which have been definitely identified as wearing the insignia of the rising sun. Unverified reports said that a foreign warship appeared off Pearl Harbor and has begun firing at the defenses of that mighty fortified post. Reports also say that the Japanese bombers scored two hits. One at Hickman Field, Air Corps Post on Oahu Island, and the other at Pearl Harbor, which set an oil tank afire. American anti-aircraft has set up a terrific din, and the sky also is filled with American battle aircraft. We have just heard that the Press Association dispatches, of course, are pouring in here. We've had a Washington bulletin received just a few minutes ago that disclosed an American Army transport, which was carrying lumber, was torpedoed 1,300 miles west of San Francisco. And we've just heard by telephone that Albert Warner in Washington has news of a State Department announcement. For that report from Albert Warner, we take you now to Washington.
A statement has just been issued now by the State Department from Secretary of State Cordell Hull. It runs as follows. On November 26th, the Secretary of State handed to the Japanese representatives a document which stated the principles which govern the policies of the government of the United States toward the situation in the Far East and setting forth principles for a comprehensive, peaceful settlement. At 1 p.m. today, this State Department statement continues, the Japanese ambassador asked for an appointment for the Japanese representatives to see the Secretary of State. The appointment was made for 1:45 p.m. The Japanese representatives arrived at 2:05 p.m. They were received by the Secretary of State at 2:20. The Japanese ambassador handed to the Secretary of State what was understood to be a reply to the American document of November 26th. Secretary of State Hull carefully read the statement presented by the Japanese representatives and immediately turned to the Japanese ambassador and with the greatest indignation said, "I must say in all my conversations with you, the Japanese ambassador," and this is Secretary Hull speaking, "I must say in all my conversations with you during the last 9 months, I have never uttered one word of untruth." Then Mr. Hull, referring to the Japanese note just handed to him, continued, "In all my 50 years of public service, I have never seen a document that was so crowded with infamous distortions and falsehoods, infamous distortions and falsehoods on a scale so huge that I never imagined any government on this planet was capable of uttering them." The contents of the Japanese note is not given. Apparently, it follows the example set by Hitler in the case of his own aggressions, in which he charges the victim of aggression with all sorts of faults. Now we have word that Secretary of War Stimson has just issued an order to all military personnel in Washington and throughout the country to report for work Monday in uniform. Then from the White House comes word that the Army has received news of signals of distress believed to come from an Army cargo boat 700 miles west of San Francisco. Presumably, this is another ship. Previously, we had word from the White House that an Army transport carrying lumber was torpedoed 1,300 miles west of San Francisco. Now, here are some of the first comments that we have gathered from congressmen. Veteran Senator Glass of Virginia says, "I suppose that this means war." And ironically, he added, "Of course, we're not going to surrender immediately without any effort to repel the attack." Senator Charles McNary, the Republican leader of the Senate, said, "I am amazed at Japan. I thought they had better judgment. I deeply regret the turn of events. Now the nation must unite in giving her a beating for her stupidity and aggression. That was from Senator McNary. Senator Hill, the Democratic whip of the Senate, says this: the United States ought to use every means, every power to lick the Japanese, to lick them thoroughly and completely, and to do the job in the quickest possible time. Except for the bare announcements from the White House, there has been no further word. It's quite obvious that the American Navy and Air Force are taking counteraction against the Japanese. Once attacked, you do not stand on ceremony. The president has ample authority to send the Army and Navy into action when this country is attacked. Presumably a naval blockade of Japan has already been ordered, and other hostilities than the Japanese air attacks will be reported. In a case of this kind, with open hostilities and the United States clearly the target of offensive action, it can be expected that the president will go before Congress. There he will explain what has taken place, and unless unofficial speculation is wrong, he will ask Congress for a declaration of war. There is no doubt what Congress would do. It has been notable all along that congressional sentiment is much more united on the subject of Japan than it has been on European developments. But more than this, the United States itself is now the subject of definite attack. Let alone past sentiment, this would be enough to bring a united opinion in Congress. We return you now to New York.
That was Albert Warner's report from Washington on the latest developments in the Far Eastern situation, with a report from the State Department. One mystery in connection with the announcement from Washington arose this afternoon when Ford Wilkins, the CBS correspondent in Manila, reported by telephone to Columbia at 3:30 o'clock that there had been no bombing of Manila. However, the INS has reported that the American naval base at Cafiti Island off Luzon was subjected to an enemy attack this morning. Army and Navy authorities commanded all forces to their stations and told them to resist the attack. There were no immediate reports on the damage. Now, Major George Fielding Elliott is here beside me again. And Major Elliott, we have a question which I believe needs answering. Do you see any grand strategy in these Japanese attacks upon the Hawaiian Islands and upon the Philippines?
The Philippines, and that is refers particularly to the naval and air base of Manila, stands between Japan's home bases and the operations which she is conducting in Indochina. Therefore, the Japanese would like, of course, to eliminate this base if they possibly could. And it seems to me quite possible that the attacks on Hawaii are intended to cover a Japanese attack on the island of Luzon, particularly directed at the naval and air base of Manila, in order to clear their lines of communication into the South China Sea, delay the arrival of the American fleet there. One interesting point is the fact that two apparently separate attacks by Japanese submarines upon American vessels between San Francisco and Honolulu have been reported. The Japanese have approximately 25 long-range submarines of the so-called I-50 class, which are capable of crossing the Pacific and returning without refueling. Apparently, therefore, these submarines, which would take about 10 to 12 days to get on that station from the nearest Japanese naval base, have been on their way for that length of time. And this throws a very curious light upon the Japanese request of a week ago for two additional weeks of negotiation. All this planning, all these attacks have been prepared over a long period of time. Certainly at least 2 weeks has elapsed since the original Japanese decisions were taken because of the location of the ships and comparatively slow ships such as submarines on this line of communications. One more item which may be of interest. We have just been informed here officially that the present reaction of the British government is officially this: to call attention to the Prime Minister's statement in his speech in the House of Commons some time ago that Great Britain would be at war with Japan 1 hour after Japan attacked the United States.
And now you've heard Mr. Warner's report of the War Department order in Washington ordering all military personnel in this country into uniform. The Army's order affected not only the thousands of officers on duty in Washington who have thus far performed their functions in civilian clothes to avoid a militaristic appearance, but all officers in every corps area, the United States possessions, and outlying bases. And here is a bulletin that has just come in from the press associations, dateline Los Angeles. Rear Admiral Charles H. Blakely broadcast an order today for all officers and men attached to the 11th Naval District to report to their ships or stations immediately. Washington is expected to blossom out tomorrow as a city of uniforms because huge numbers of officers have been pouring into the city for months to perform the Army's overhead functions. Early said that so far as the president's information went, attacks were still in progress at Manila and in Hawaii. That is, of course, Stephen Early, presidential press secretary. In other words, he said, we don't know that the Japanese have bombed and left. He went on to say, as soon as the information of the attacks on Manila and Hawaii was received by the War and Navy departments, it was flashed immediately to the president at the White House. Thereupon, and immediately, the president directed the Army and the Navy to execute all previously prepared orders looking to the defense of the United States. The president is now with the secretaries of Navy and War, and steps are being taken to advise the congressional leaders. Also, we received a report earlier from Washington that any news of the Far Eastern developments would have to come from the White House. Navy officials, when queried for news, made that statement. Congressional leaders immediately were advised of the crisis, too. Attachés of the Japanese embassy began burning secret documents in the embassy yard. The group of newspaper reporters and photographers stood by, watching, and after a few minutes, they were ordered to leave. The embassy doors were closed. There was no disorder. Columbia, of course, will interrupt any of its regularly scheduled programs to bring you bulletins and important developments on the news from the Far East as it develops in Washington, and as we receive reports from our correspondents, the press associations and affiliated stations in the from the danger zone. W.L. Shira will be on the air at 5:45 over most of these stations. John Daly speaking.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WCCO Minneapolis. The United Press announces that it is ordering into operation on a 24-hour schedule all of its leased wire circuits throughout the country. The order was given to the American Telephone and Telegraph Company shortly after 2 p.m. to see that all newspaper and radio clients of the United Press, regardless of their normal hours of service, were hooked into the UP wire system immediately for continuing service until further notice. Now we take you back to the symphony concert by the New York Philharmonic Symphony Society.